This is Bob, Graz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Hour number three of Bob, Graz, and Tom with Graz and Tom. Thank you for being with us. Get a chance to visit with one of our favorite guys right now from the Seahawks postgame show, legendary Seahawk himself, our good friend Paul Moyer. Hello, Paul.
Graz, Tom, thanks for having me on.
How have you recovered from your London trip?
Whew, let me tell you, that was a fantastic trip, but that was about a 24-hour getting back. By the time we had to leave the hotel and stopped in Minnesota and made it home, but it was a great trip. I've told people I really wasn't that excited to go to it. Once I got there, just to be in London and the whole Wembley Stadium and the way the Seahawks played, it reminded me, at least the experience, of the 2013 Super Bowl when we were in New York. It was that memorable, it was that cool, and the 12 did not disappoint. It was really a fun trip.
So basically, if they had lost, you would rather probably forget it entirely.
Well, we left on a Wednesday, got in Thursday morning. So, for us, no complaining. It's the Seahawks gracious to take us along. It was pretty cool, but it's a long trip. And, you only got a couple days really to see the sights. And, you got one day you're working hard for the game. So, just the time zone back and forth, that's tough. But, there was just something about it. It was really a magical moment. And, with that being said, I mean, everybody is on such a high after the game. The locker room, we did the post-game show right by the locker room because the way the setup was in the stadium. And they were going nuts. I mean, it was really a cool experience. And, less than 24 hours later, we find out about Paul Allen. So that obviously brought the temperature down a little bit on the excitement. But definitely a memorable week.
Indeed it was, and I know you didn't know Paul Allen particularly well, but it doesn't matter. I mean, the influence and the impact that he had affects everyone around the Seahawks family, doesn't it?
No question. We were sitting there, I think we landed in Minnesota yesterday, and it came across the news wire, and I was with Dory and NASA and a couple other guys, I think Jordan Babineau. And it was just a punch in the gut. Because I think everybody, look, everybody's chimed in about this and they've had some great things. And the takeaway is I think everybody felt like they knew him, respected the man immensely. And I was listening to some of his interviews afterwards and I just go, man, for a guy who didn't speak much, he was so focused in his speech. He didn't waste a word. He knew exactly what he wanted. It's really impressive to go back and listen to some of his speeches or interviews. And the part that's, I don't know if it's scary, but the part we're all waiting for is it's hard to replace someone who's such a great leader. You can replace people with money. You can replace people who are a good businessman elsewhere. But to take that to another franchise or another business and to continually to be able to hire the very best people for those roles, that's a skill set that's hard to replace. So we'll see. I think he set this organization up fantastic. Chuck Arnold, Pete Carroll, John Schneider, great leaders in themselves. So, but we'll see what plays out. But he's a tough one to replace.
Yeah, I think with any successful person, especially somebody who's successful to that level, I mean, you need to have good decision-making skills. You need to be able to hire people. And I just think about that hiring of Pete Carroll. We heard Pete talking about it this morning. I mean, sometimes you're the leader, but you need to put that right person in place who's then going to make everything else happen. And you're talking about this London trip. I mean, Pete Carroll is the perfect guy to manage that kind of situation. I wonder if Paul Allen even knew that things were going to turn out as well as they did when he made that hire.
Well, go back. First of all, Paul was very loyal. I mean, he gave Dennis Erickson a shot. He bought the team. He was already the head coach. He gave him a chance. He went and got Mike Holmgren, and then you go with Todd Lewicki, and this organization, it changes. And then he talked about this when he fired Jim Mora. That was hard on him. I don't know if that was his pick, but that was not easy for him to fire a guy after 1 year. But he knew. He knew right away that the leadership wasn't right. Franchise was not going the right direction. And he went and had the conversation with Pete, shared his vision. Pete shared his vision. And I don't want to say the rest is history, but, you know, it's been an incredible run. And that is hard to replace because, again, there's a lot of successful people and there's a lot of successful businesses that get passed down to the families that don't continue to be successful. I think he's had enough, and he's been planning this, and the people that are in place right now, I feel very good about it. But, again, his vision, think about this, too. When he got the stadium, and this was not something that was real popular at the time, he brought the whole state to get that stadium passed and, you know, became a partner with them. And you look at now, fast forward it to all these years later, look at the 12s across the state. It's not a King County, Seattle, Western Washington team. This is a Northwest team. And I really believe he built that vision way back when.
Well, the interesting thing is there's never been an owner, in my opinion, that I've seen, at least in the current era, that's been more hands-off in terms of public. I'm not talking about behind the scenes when he was actually running the organization, but just in a public perception, public persona, that's going to be different no matter who it is.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. You know, unless he, you know, gave them clear direction and hopefully a blueprint on how to be successful with this. And part of that's his personality, too. You know, he'd prefer to be behind the scenes. You know, why he was shy, again, when he was out front and when he was speaking, you know, he commanded that respect and presence. I mean, you listen to what he said. So, you know, we'll see. I think right now, you know, over the next 5 years, this franchise is in great shape. We'll see how it continues to evolve.
Over to the team itself, Paul. I'm not sure how many games this team is going to win, but when you watch them play the way they did against the Raiders, it's tough to pick out a weak point, right? I mean, penalties, I guess, have plagued this team forever. But if you look around just from position group to position group, what's the area you'd like to see them improve the most?
Well, consistency. It'd probably be defensively. I mean, offensively, I think the last three games, we have the identity. We know what our strengths are. And, you know, we're going to run the football, and we're going to take some shots downfield. And I was writing down some notes before I came on here. This reminds me a bit of 2012, in that the first eight games we finished 4-4, won some games, you know, that maybe we were surprised at that got the attention of the nation, but still finished 4-4 at the halfway mark, and something caught fire. And I feel like that happened in London, and that defensively we're really starting to get after the quarterback. So if you said one thing I'd like to see more consistency, it's just that. Can we put pressure on the quarterback? Because it's been, we did against Dallas, we did against the Rams, we did against the Raiders. To be the type of defense they want to be, you know, throughout the season, that's the one area that you just got to be more consistent. But this feels... I'm not sure it's completely there, but it feels a little bit like 2012 and the young guys that we have, playmakers, running the football, letting, you know, really Russell Wilson be at his very best in play action and taking shots downfield.
And that's the thing about Russell Wilson is that he, maybe other quarterbacks wouldn't be as willing to kind of step back a little bit and let their numbers suffer. His touchdown numbers aren't suffering, but he's not throwing the ball as much at all, and they're a lot better for it.
Well, you know, I think he is, let's win first. You know, I don't care how it looks, and if I have to throw it 20, then I don't think it's necessarily him. I just think it's the way the offense is built. You know, it's not built to probably pass protect 35 times a game, you know, make a lot of plays, you know, in the open field with the wide receivers. It is let's wear this defensive line linebackers down. And this is, you know, we know this is Pete's blueprint. It's just taken a long time to get there. But if you look at Britt, Sweezy, and certainly Fluker, and Brown, Fetty, these guys are the kind of guys, if you're in a dark alley, you want them with you. They're fighters. They are a bunch of tough dudes. And we're seeing that. We're seeing us wear down offensive lines. We're able to run the football. It's a good scheme. I love it. And then I think for Russell, the answer to that is, he's just going to have a high quarterback rating and throw touchdowns. And I don't think he minds doing that, particularly if he can be protected.
You know, that tough dudes thing you were just talking about, that seems to be a hallmark of like every Pete Carroll team ever. Is that a hard thing when you're putting together a roster? Is that a hard thing to identify, that sort of intangible?
Well, I think part of it is, what does the league force you to do? And the league has forced us into this passing game. We would call it passive. I even think Pete Carroll said about the Cowboys, it was the Rams, they want to play a more passive game, and that they want to get the ball out in space. They don't want to just pound the football the whole game and rough you up. They want to get their athletes in space. And if you are, I heard Ray Roberts talk about this a lot. If you're constantly backpedaling as an offensive lineman and having to catch defensive linemen, I mean, you can't put your will on them and be physical. You can only do that in the running game, and it's got to be a downhill running game. And I'll tell you from my experience as a former player, it wears on you in the fourth quarter. People forget about that human element. Mm. It's, if you ever played knuckle sandwich where two guys slam your fist together, the first time you're willing to do it. The second time, someone will flinch, and that is football. And you can get that into the fourth quarter, and the games are tight, and now you're imposing your will on people. Man, this is what we've seen the last, certainly two of the last 3 weeks, and I'd even say, the last 4 weeks.
Anyone see this coming from Bradley McDougal?
A little bit. I think we just didn't get a chance to see him consistently play a position. They played him a little bit in a nickels at times as a drop-down safety. They played him some at free. So he was coming in and out of packages, and now we're getting a chance to see him play, every snap at a position. I liked him as a player. I just, I knew he was going to be a different player because, you're giving up 35, 40 pounds to, Cam Chancellor. But I loved his coverage ability and what he could do, just making plays. I don't know if we thought he would be at a Pro Bowl level like he is. But you go and look at these four DBs, I wrote that down too. I go, you got Griffin, you've got Tedrick Thompson, you got Flowers, and you got McDougal, all guys under 30 years old, who are playing really good football.
What about the bye week itself? We just heard from Pete Carroll about an hour ago. A lot of guys are actually getting healthy right now, but you combine that maybe with the momentum of the way they played the last 2 weeks. What do you think about the timing of the bye?
Anytime you win, you want to keep playing. But at this point in the season, they're beat up. And, to be able to have a potential opportunity to get, the guy you were hoping, Ed Dixon, your tight end, you get hopefully KJ Wright back. And I'm watching Shaq Griffin. He's not quite right. He's not breaking the way he did last year. So Russell Wilson is nursing that hamstring. So we got a lot of guys that get the full 2 weeks to rest. That's a good thing. And I really think Pete's going to have these guys ready to go into Detroit. It's going to be a tough game. Road games are always tough. But I think this is a good time for the bye.
In retrospect, what do you think happened the first 2 weeks?
We weren't good enough yet. I know that's a simplistic phrase there, but we played two games on the road. I think we played two good defenses, particularly the front seven in Denver and Chicago. We just couldn't, find our way offensively. I mean, we just didn't know who we were. We threw it too much. We were still struggling to have those impactful runs. And, the third down thing kills you. You just don't get, if you don't convert on third downs, you never get into a flow. But let's go back to those two games. They're both on the road. We had the lead in one of them in the fourth quarter. We had a chance to tie the game in the fourth quarter on the other one. We're in the game, And if I said, hey, we're 3-3 right now, and maybe next week or 2 weeks from now we're 4-3 and go down to play the Rams again, I think you would have been okay with that going into the season. But we're playing good football. We're going to be in every game. And it's just going to be, do we make enough plays in the fourth quarter to win them?
How much does Ken Norton have to do with the personality of this defense? Because this is a different group, obviously, than the last several years. Chris Richard and Dan Quinn and Gus Bradley. How much does his personality mix with these guys?
Well, I think his voice definitely matters. He's a guy that you're not going to cross. And it doesn't mean you can't have conversations and challenge a scheme or a call as a player, but it's going to end there because he's not going to play. And again, this is not a knock on Chris Richard. It's hard to go from a player to a coach to all of a sudden a defensive coordinator with guys who are looking at you almost like they're your peers. And I went through that. It takes time, and there's some battles that go on there. So I just think it just needed a new voice of discipline. They're not doing a lot different. They were a little bit when before Earl got hurt in the secondary, but they're not doing a lot different. You know, they're still playing some zones and mans and nothing too fancy, and they're starting to really understand their assignments, and that's why they're playing such good football. You're not seeing as many mistakes as they did earlier in the year.
How impressed have you been with Frank Clark?
Well, I've been impressed with Frank since day one, just in his ability, but now to watch young men become men, and that's what he is. He's become a man. He's a leader. He's worked his craft. We had him on our Hawks Live show a week ago last Thursday, and we talked about some stuff with him in his technique, and then we had him on after the game this last week, and he didn't want to get too much into it, but he now goes from a two-point stance and a three-point stance. He's changed up some of his techniques. So that's a guy who's not willing to just to live on his athletic ability. He wants to take it to the next level and be the best he can possibly be. And that's what's fun. When you see young men turn into men and they've really excelled in their craft, we're seeing that from Frank Clark.
Did you see this coming from David Moore? Because it seemed like the last couple of weeks he's just exploded. Does that come about in practice, or did it just sort of manifest itself on the field?
Well, I think we all saw it in preseason. And, you know, he's been a guy last year, you know, we had an eye on, and in preseason he was, you know, probably the best receiver. You know, he had one of the best preseasons. It's just now do you get an opportunity? You know, he was behind Brandon Marshall, who's a veteran who looked very good in preseason. And, you know, he had some drops, and now all of a sudden David Moore gets his opportunity. He's just continuing what he did in preseason. It doesn't always happen, so that's the surprise. You know, you get a guy who's young, you go, okay, it's easy to do it in preseason and practice. Can you get it in front of, you know, 80, 90,000 people on national TV? That's a tougher call. But, you know, pleasant surprise, and he's a difference maker. We need guys who can go downfield, and Russell can just throw it up a one-on-one situation, and more than not, they're going to come down with it.
Did you ever see the NFL expanding to London?
We talked about that. At first, because we had not been there, I didn't know how that would work. You know, I'm like, yeah, they're not going to be that enthusiastic. I don't even really know if I enjoy watching it. But they were really early games back then when they were doing them. But having gone there now just to see the electricity in that stadium and the fan base, and we traveled well, but, you know, 80% of the Seahawks fans were from Europe. You know, from Germany, they were there in London. So somehow we created this fan base, which was pretty remarkable. So the electricity's there, and I think the excitement's there. I just don't know how you do it logistically, unless you do it something like baseball where, and I read in one of the stories that they'd be on the road for maybe 3 or 4 weeks with a home base in the States, and then same thing, they would stay home for 3 or 4 weeks in London or wherever they would have it. And then I see that that's a possibility. But I don't see it happening anytime soon. I think they'll keep playing this the way it is and see if more and more, you know, teams and fans, you know, enjoy this. I think anybody who went there here in Seattle is going to say, yeah, I'd do that again.
What did it feel like in the crowd? How different was it from a regular NFL crowd?
It was an NFL crowd. From the beginning of the game, people were there early. It was electric. That's what I said when I tweeted out. I go, this feels like a Super Bowl. When the Seahawks came, you know, just for their warm-ups, it was like a Century. It was, I would even say, better than a Century League crowd because they were there earlier. The gates opened at 4, 2 hours before the game, and they were in there. They booed the Raiders, you know, the home team. You know, so I was like, wow, this is and it was a cool stadium on top of that. The experience was awesome, and I think you heard that from the players, the coaches, everybody. It was definitely a big-time NFL game and a big-time NFL stage.
You know, it's interesting because for the people who traveled from here, that's one thing, but we were talking last week, Paul, you know, how many people in England actually know the game of football and the ins and outs of the rules and all the little intricacies? Did you get a sense that everybody basically got it over there?
Yeah, they did two things. Well, we talked with a couple of our Uber drivers and limo drivers taking us to and from the game, and they know about it. Their confusion was, you know, understanding the rules. They don't like the timeouts, the slow play, because in their soccer world, or football as they call it, but in their soccer world, you know, you don't get those timeouts. They played up on the scoreboard after, like, punts and stuff in between plays. They would actually put what the rules were and what they were trying to get accomplished.
Oh.
So they were trying to educate the crowd along the way. Here's what I will tell you. They understand our American football a lot better than I understand cricket. Because cricket was played on our TVs in the hotel on about 5 or 6 stations. I haven't got a clue. I don't understand it, but it is everywhere. They've got parks and pitches or whatever they call them there. So, but I think they like it. They're just still trying to understand it. No different than us probably when soccer first was becoming popular out here.
Interesting.
Paulie, great stuff, man. We always appreciate the visit with you.
Thank you. Yeah, sad loss with Paul Allen. Yeah. You know, incredible man. But the experience, you know, I was thinking about this. He got a win for him on you know, his, one of his last days here. And so that'll be something we'll all remember. Very memorable time, and wish their family nothing but the best.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
All right, Paul.
Paul Moyer on the Venue Kings hotline there, and we talked about some of the hires he made just for head coaches. And again,
well, the biggest hire he made was Todd Lewicki.
Okay, sure.
He was the most significant hire that the Seahawks made.
Was he hired away from somewhere?
He had been with the Tampa Bay Lightning of the National Hockey
That's
League.
That's right. That's right. Because sometimes
I don't know if he was still with them or if he was a free agent at that point, but. His hiring, he started the 12-man flag thing. He's, you know, you can give him credit for kind of really emphasizing the whole 12s aspect of things. Was a master showman, and it's why I've got such confidence in the NHL coming here, because
that's going to work.
Yeah, and it's why I'm surprised that he got out of the NFL, where he was the number 2 man, was in line to replace Roger Goodell.
Hmm.
I mean, I guess it goes to show how smart he is.
Who still hasn't been found, by the way.
Still hasn't been seen anywhere, but. Yeah, it was front office hires as well as coaching hires.
Yeah, sometimes just the luck of your circumstance, right? They wanted to move on past Jim Mora, and it wasn't that Pete Carroll was available, but the circumstances down at USC kind of rushed that situation, right? It made him available, and you could snatch it up. How many teams across the league spend forever? The Raiders are one of them, looking for their head coach. They just can't find the right guy.
Well, he hired the 2 winningest coaches in Seahawks history.
Yeah.
Mike Holmgren before him.
Yeah, you almost don't even count Jim Mora because of the way things have worked out here.
It was just 1 year.
Yeah, he's 2 for 2 in my mind.
I know what you mean.
He hired Erickson too? Or was Erickson already
Dennis
here?
Dennis Erickson was hired by 2 for 3.
Right. He probably could have done worse than him, though.
Well, they were 500 every year.
Yeah. I just can't picture a Seahawk organization that's 500 every year.
It was bizarre. I mean, they were with Erickson, and in the first 4 years with Holmgren, they were.
Right.
And there are people calling for his head, and I remember saying on the air, I said, if you've already gone with the hottest college coach, now you've gone with a proven pro football, a proven winner, a Super Bowl winning head coach, where do you go next?
Yeah.
If Holmgren doesn't work, where do you go next? And they waited, obviously, and it was wise because 2 years later, he had him in the Super Bowl.
That's the way it works out in the game of football sometimes, eh, Graz?
Yeah, I can't believe you said that.
I can't believe that either. It just came out just like that.
It just does.
Some final thoughts from Pete Carroll next. I'm Bob Graz and Tom.
Bravo Golf Tango. Bravo Golf Tango. The line is in. It's time now for the eavesdrop.
It's been somewhat of a somber 24 hours around here, Graz. I'm going to give you a little bit of levity.
Okay.
Now, tell me first, are you big on the Jaguars this year?
I was.
Okay, but maybe over the last couple of weeks, that's soured a little bit.
40-7 to the Cowboys.
Right. If you want to talk about two of the great defenses from last year transferring into this year, Minnesota and Jacksonville, it just, for whatever reason, it has not happened. But have they been overrated all along? Here's Rex Ryan's thought.
What happened to Saxonville?
Well, first off, this defense is, I mean, they're not a fraud, but you're not
you know, exactly the steel curtain of back in the day. I mean, you've given up 70 points. So it's easy. We all point fingers at Blake Bortles. Me especially, I can't stand the way he plays. But this defense is so overrated, it's not even funny. And, you know, Saxonville, well, we all know why they get their sacks.
Why?
Because they play the Titans twice, the Colts twice, and the Texans twice. That'll give you 50 sacks right there. None of those teams can protect the quarterback.
I always assume that when you're the good, the quote-unquote good team in a certain division, like say the AFC East.
Sure.
The reason to me why the Patriots are routinely 13-3 and 14-2 has to do with the fact that they beat up on Miami and the Jets and the Bills every year.
Right.
As opposed to say, I mean, say what you want about the teams in the NFC East. I know a lot of the times they're overrated as a division.
Sure.
But the reason why you only win that division at 10-6 or 9-7 and 11-5 is
because the teams are usually good.
You're at least competitive within the division,
right?
And I think he makes an interesting point there about Jacksonville. Now, Jacksonville hasn't been great forever.
No.
They've only really been good for about a year.
Titans were virtually a playoff team last year. They were a playoff team last year. What's the matter with me?
Were the Titans a playoff team last year?
Yes, they were.
I don't remember that. I have no recollection of them as a Titan.
That's when the Chiefs had that collapse.
Mariota, remember?
Mm-hmm. Mariota had that crazy, blocked for his running back. Okay.
Well, but they're still they're not like an AFC power or anything. And with the Colts, we all know they can't protect Andrew Luck at all there. Houston probably should be better. But again, as far as protecting the quarterback.
Rex Ryan doesn't think so.
No, but
that was,
you know what? Rex Ryan, when he was a head coach, did they protect Sanchez? Because they had a terrific defense. We know what the Jet defense was.
They didn't ask Sanchez to do a whole lot.
No. Yeah, they ran the ball. They ran the ball a ton. They had a run block. That's probably true. So protect the quarterback, play good defense, and you're good to go. Anyway, I thought
he didn't like Blake Bortles either.
Yeah, he doesn't care for the way he plays. Doug Marrone seems to be okay with it.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, look, did he go out of his way winning games last year? At times he actually did. But how long can that continue? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick, we talked about him the first couple weeks of the season. He's not going to do that every single week. Anyway.
Well, we'll see if Jacksonville's just in a little bit of a slump and if they bounce back or not.
Jalen Ramsey didn't even say anything after the game the other day. Like, he's usually the first guy in front of the mic to tell everybody what the deal is. No, he's not even talking right now. All right, Pete Carroll was on with Brock and Salk this morning just to offer some final thoughts here on Paul Allen and his passing and what led to Pete leaving USC.
That's why I got here. You know, I would never have left USC in a million years, but it was because of his spirit, what he wanted to create and how he wanted to go about it that made it so obvious. And then he only impressed me more as we went through the years, you know, doing this.
You believe that? You believe that one, Gross? He never would have left USC if not for Paul Allen?
No. I'm sorry. I'm cynical.
Yeah.
I think he left because he knew they were going on probation.
And this just happened to swoop in.
And
the situation
timing was perfect.
Yeah, because I don't remember hearing anything about Pete going to the NFL at all.
No.
Even with the idea that he might leave SC.
You got to understand that when he got hired here, most people did not think it was a good hire.
True, just because of
his
prior experience in the NFL. Although 10 years of success, roughly a decade of success at USC, do you remember what his defenders were saying? Like the people who were in favor of it? Like, hey, he's a winner.
Look what he's done at SC.
Yeah.
He's obviously evolved.
He made it work. What
he sure
you say?
Did. He sure, he and they were right. They were 100% right.
And he built his own thing. He did it his own way. He didn't try to come in and
try and make do with what he had. I mean, I think that was what he realized was lacking the first time he did it. He needed to go about it his own way. He needed to have player control to a degree, and he's got it. He had to get guys that would go with his quote-unquote program, and he's got it.
Yeah, sometimes when you fail, you realize you failed because you didn't trust your instincts or you didn't do it your own way, and you end up having those regrets later on. Even if he failed this time, at least he would have failed because he did what he thought
was
right.
He did it his way, correct.
Yeah, there is a difference. We talked a lot today about how Paul Allen was a hands-off guy.
He was a hands-off guy in the sense, in the classic way you would think of owners that are involved. But he was tuned in, and he loved to know what was going on. He loved the information. He was a problem solver, and he was a guy. He said it one time to John, I'm a solutions guy. I need problems to solve, and that's so he would look for ways. He would look to try to find the things that maybe we hadn't seen yet, and so he would challenge us with it. But he was always supportive.
I asked you during a break what you thought Pete Carroll, what his interaction with Paul Allen might have looked like over the years.
It was probably occasional during the season. It probably wasn't constant. It
wasn't like an everyday thing.
It wasn't like going to Jerry Jones' office every day, which Jason Garrett I'm sure does.
To report.
He had a lot of things going on, Paul Allen, outside of football.
Yeah, he had his hands certainly in a lot of different circles. And making the Seahawks first class.
There's more to it than just the building, It's the spirit that you bring with you and how you're willing to support and look for ways to do the right thing for people. You hear us talk so much about how we want to treat our people around here. Well, we were supported to do that, and we were able to do it, and we were cutting edge. We were able to continue to try, and we continue to try to pioneer ways to find how we can support and help the performance and the life of the people that we're dealing with, and he was totally in support of all of that.
Well, that doesn't happen unless he is.
Nope.
And that's the point of bringing up a lot when you say he's a hands-off owner. That's just public. That's just in terms of publicly taking credit for stuff. You don't know what goes on behind the scenes.
Mm.
Normally. Now, in some cases, you know what's going on behind the scenes.
Because they talk about it.
Yeah, like Jerry Jones. Keep using him as an example. But
right. But
even Mara and his comments on Beckham, how he feels. You didn't know how Paul Allen felt. He kept it close to the vest and kept dealing with his guys.
When Pete talks here in the beginning about the building...
There's more to it than just the building.
Is he referring to CenturyLink or the VMAC?
No. He's talking about building...
The team, the organization.
That's what I got out of that.
Because I remember when I first got here, because while he's talking about him being first class, when I first got here in 2011, the first time I ever went out to the VMAC, I was with Brock. And Brock's been around to, I think, many different camps, right? Even
sure.
Just as a player. And I have no point of reference on that. And Brock went out of his way to point out to me that this is like a top three facility, I think, at least at the time, in the NFL. Practice facility, headquarters, et cetera.
You wouldn't believe what the Seahawks' previous practice facility was like.
I would not.
No.
What was it?
Just up the road. Excuse me. At Northwest College. It was at a small college.
Which is something that's not unusual.
Small college. No, it's not.
The Jets practice at Hofstra forever.
Right.
It's also a small college.
Everyone's kind of putting together their own facilities, but the Seahawks, are just and nothing against Northwest College, a nice spot, but in terms of NFL facilities, it was probably the worst.
Right. I mean, this is first class all the way. For any of you who've ever been out to training camp in August, there's a lot of you who I know have. Just looking at that building, you can see into the weight room.
Yep.
I mean, the practice field that's on the inside, everything, even our little media room in there. I mean, it really is first class all the way.
And NFL teams have all kind of done that, but it's a huge difference for some who have been just, like you talked about the Jets being at Hofstra when they moved into their facility. It's a big difference.
The Raiders, weren't they on like a high school field for a while? Maybe in the 80s. It was like just a dirt patch.
They might have been.
Or something like
that. They were in Oxnard for a long time. Which was a college.
Oxnard?
Yeah.
Okay.
City in California.
All right. I just hadn't heard of it.
That's okay.
I'm not doubting you.
No, don't doubt me, Tom.
I know your local college is down there in the game of football.
San Francisco 49ers in the Bill Walsh glory days would spend half their training camp in Yuba City, which is a Aaron Rodgers' hometown, by the way.
Ah.
Or where he played, just in it was Yuba City was rated the worst city in America.
How can you rate that?
I don't know how. I'm not saying that it is.
Okay.
But it was rated as such, and they used to go up there and train for half their year.
Worst city in America. We got the 49ers. How is that possible?
It was unbelievable.
And again, they were a good organization.
They were there
at
the top of the NFL at that point. They had Redwood City, which is where they'd go down for the last couple of weeks of training camp. But the Seahawks, when Mike Holmgren was running them, used to train over in Eastern Washington.
Right. Now, how did that work with the media? You guys
poorly.
Just all stay out there?
Yes. The
For
wagon
like a month?
Wheel in. It was brutal.
Oh, my God.
It was brutal.
Just all you guys cooped up in a motel?
Yep.
Man.
Nice thing was Spokane was about 8 miles away, but you could stay. There was a motel that was right there where we stayed.
Wow.
The one time I went out.
Yeah.
The one time.
Oh, the one time.
Yeah, I went out 1 year, and that was it.
They didn't make you go out like every year?
No.
Lucky you.
Yes.
Yeah, VMAC is nothing if opulent. Not convenient. Well, it's opulent, but it's convenient from really sure. For most areas. It's easy to get to.
Absolutely.
Going up and down 405. All right, we sum it up next. I'm Bob Gross and Tom.
It's time to sum it up with Bob Gross and Tom. The final word every day on the show of record at 245.
I asked both you and Ombre a question about clutch and which current player would you rather have more than Aaron Rodgers in a tight spot.
Mm-hmm. A quarterback in an NFL game.
Right. But, and maybe we should revisit this tomorrow a little bit when we bring back some sound from Ombre. The way that the NFL is right now with the obvious emphasis on offense.
Video game football.
Yeah, it's a little, as I'm thinking about it, and Aaron Rodgers is a great player. He is. But what he accomplished just last night, that 3rd and 15, that drive doesn't happen if not for the Richard Sherman penalty, which should it have been called? Maybe. But would it have been called 20 years ago, 30 years
Definitely
ago?
Not.
Maybe not, right? And all of a sudden, they're given new life, a couple of passes here and there. And by the way, don't think for a second that a DB, after seeing Sherman get called, isn't going to pull up on the next play a little bit and be more careful.
Well put.
Right?
Well put.
I mean, I told you before, I don't know if you did you see the last drive or not?
Yes, I did.
The way that those balls were just not even zipping, but just kind of floating gently over every defensive back's head right into the arms of the Packer receiver. It was like, are they even trying? Well, yeah, they're trying. They're trying to avoid penalties.
That's what they're trying to do.
Right, which is making it a heck of a lot easier for any quarterback.
Yep.
Right? We ask, how does a guy like Fitzpatrick or Blake Bortles or whoever have the kind of success that they have? Well, that's a pretty big part of it.
Mitch Trubisky threw 6 touchdown passes in a game this year.
I mean, what are these?
We saw him.
Yeah.
In game two, and everyone watched him in game one. I mean, I agree with you. They've made it possible for anyone to have a great day.
Right.
And Blake Bortles has had a 400-yard passing day, too.
This year, too?
Yes, he has.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, because last year, he actually, again, we didn't watch him as closely as maybe as Jacksonville fans did. But when you start seeing even Beathard last night.
Yeah.
When you start seeing quarterbacks like that have monster nights in situations where they really shouldn't, you have to at least account for the idea that the rules are rigged for them.
They are, but, I mean, as we pointed out, to the NFL's benefit, and maybe this is the NFL's way of getting the young audience with points. Who, I mean, they even joke about it in commercials. Who bitches about defense? Old men. your father.
Complaints about the fact that it's not there?
Yeah, defense wins championships. Well, it does. In that, I think it's a
Geico
ad.
Yeah. I'm not going to replace this phone. It's not broken.
That refers to you as turning into your old man. I mean, it's a video game sort of world, so it may be the root of the appeal of the league. It's just going to be interesting to me to see how this is going to impact the league in the future. What are they even going to get good athletes to play on defense?
Right. What will the audience be bored of at some point? Because if you see a comeback like we saw last night all the time, and I feel like we're seeing it more and more and more, how entertaining will that be?
Yeah.
Now, a close game will always be entertaining.
I suppose so.
Right? I think that's kind of what helps. Even if the Packers hadn't come back last night and they had gone into overtime and somebody kicks a field goal, at least that tension was there. I think that's what keeps the audience.
It's funny that football has evolved into a higher scoring, more fun version of itself, some might argue, where baseball's done the exact opposite.
It's gone right, because of the strikeouts.
Home runs and strikeouts and the game not in motion, a much more boring version of what it used to be.
Despite its peak in popularity. The PEDs, I mean, that was kind of the reason why.
Chicks dig the long ball.
They do?
That's what they used to say anyway.
I know. I remember those commercials. We got Cy Young Award winners over here.
But the NFL is in a different place. And certainly last night showed it.
I have some good news for you. It's really bad news for most people. But the next game you can look forward to watching, which probably will not have much tension in it at all, Denver at Arizona on Thursday night.
Ooh.
So you can look forward to that one.
Wow. I'm just not going to.
No, I don't think so. I always say this on Thursday. Hey, I wake up and there's football on. I think I may skip that one.
Yeah, on paper anyway, doesn't look like a winner.
You never know. I mean, watching Josh Rosen for a few minutes might be okay. And again, if it's close at the end, fine.
Well, that's what the NFL is going for. You never know.
Right.
Any given Sunday. That's an old school mantra that they still have, and it still works.
Red Zone Channel about, what, 12:45 every Sunday? There's at least a handful of close games.
At least a handful.
Yeah, whether or not they've been well-played games, entertaining games, defensively or offensively, anybody's guess. But yeah, there's at least some every week.
All right, well, our thanks to Paul Moyer, to El Hombre Michael Bradley, and I guess we can thank Pete Carroll, too, for his press conference, right?
He had to answer a lot of questions about Paul Allen today.
Yes, he did, and some that he had no business answering, which he didn't answer.
Did they ask him when the funeral was?
Yes.
Oof.
He's the football coach.
Coaching football games.
Yep.
All right.
His best to, anyway. What do we got tomorrow?
We're going to be having our weekly conversation with Jake Heaps tomorrow.
And we turn back the clock on El Hombre a little bit, too, don't we?
Yeah, we'll come back to some of the stuff we just talked about, too.
All right.
All right. The game of football, of course.
Of course.
Bob Rosenthal.